SiriusXM.org.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour two, on this Tuesday. And given the news yesterday that Mr. Fipke has really generously waived stud fees involving the stallions of his that stand really around the country, I thought it might be appropriate, and Sid volunteered to make a Tuesday appearance. And we're also going to talk about his TDN piece from Thursday that has really gotten a lot of attention, and very much from the breeding community, commercial breeders. First of all, Sid, how's the homestead? How are you guys handling everything?
We're good, Steve. Thanks for asking. I haven't actually been out of my house since last Thursday, when my wife and I volunteered with a local organization to a great organization that's helping underprivileged people here and people in dire need. A woman by the name of Naushin Ali, who's in Kensington, Brooklyn, nearby. She and her group are collecting food and groceries, and so we volunteered to help deliver them, and that was a really eye-opening experience. I'm glad we did it. We're going to do it again this week, but it's another example. It's appropriate, the segue to Mr. Fipke on this, but just another example of someone stepping up to help in this pandemic in any small way as she can. And we're happy to be a part of that as well.
Well, there's so many examples some that are completely new to people. Then there's people like Chef Jose Andres, who has right. filled into the, just thrown himself into the breach time and again, after, the hurricanes, in the Caribbean, and, wherever there's not just the Caribbean, but, wherever there's an emergency now, he has, put this, remarkable machinery, into work, to feed people. I mean, there's so much, graciousness and generosity and selflessness, certainly starting with the medical community, who
absolutely,
are being, just ravaged. And of course, it's in the face of incredible stupidity and just bullheadedness and obstinance of people that just are too stupid to exist, frankly. But very, very, I thought this was a gesture, and that because of the stud fee involved with this collection of stallions, when it comes to Mr. Fipke, Sid, it's geared towards smaller breeders, and
we'll
right. I mean, we'll meld into your piece from Thursday in a second, but this very much is designed to help the kind of people that that utilize his stallions.
Yeah, I mean, half the breeding season's already over, and when Mr. Fipke spoke to me last Friday, wanted to do something to help because half the most mares are booked by this time. That's the reality of how a normal breeding season works. Sure, you pick up some horses off the track, or some late foaling mares that may not have been planned for yet. But, you know, say you have a book, I would say about 75% of mares are already booked by this time. People know already who they're going to go to. And so what he felt was that these people had booked mares to his stallions, for example, in a different, totally different economy. And, you know, he just felt bad that a lot of these people would be locked into contractually stud fees that, you know, they might have planned when times were better. But by the time these fees come payable next year, it's projected to be, you know, a vastly different economy. So, you know, that was the genesis, really, of deciding just to, a gesture on his part to help primarily those people that have already been locked in contractually to stud fees. And of course, if you take those away, then, you know, anybody else who might want to breed through the end of the year, you have to offer them the same terms. So that's why, you know, they're not going to be, he won't be charging a fee for anybody else from here on in. I doubt there are going to be that many people that are going to be breeding in that range, but if they do, they have the same considerations that he afforded the people who'd already contractually booked, which is to cancel the fee and zero contract it.
Really nice. And, of course, the stallions, they'll give them a quick rundown. At Darby Dan, B Jersey, Tale of Akati, and Tale of Verve. Colebrook Farms stands Danish Dynaformer and Perfect Timber, and Hidden Springs has Forever Doro, and Dolling Ranch in California has Jersey Town.
Yeah, I mean, these are all, you know, horses that he believes in, and that's the other part of this thing. As you know, he's not a commercial breeder. He's a guy that against the current wave of fashion of breeding for the commercial marketplace. He breeds primarily the race to try to make his stallions and his mares. And so he's fully committed to breeding and will continue to breed to all his stallions. You know, B Jersey, his first foals are just coming right now. Same with Taylor Verve some of the others in Canada. So it's a... some promising stallions, and, you know, anything could happen. B Jersey's a grade one winner, won the Met Mile. Taylor Verve, who essentially isn't even being advertised because he stands at Darby Dan, but he was standing for 2000 to begin with, and he really wasn't what you'd call a commercial horse, and the only people that would breed to him were very small type of owner breeders. So, you know, they all fall into the range of the segment that's most vulnerable, you know, whether in society or racing is a microcosm of society, then it's the same demographic, the lower end of the scale economically. So, you know, it's a tremendous gesture on his part. And, you know, like I said, I'm very proud that he did it. And he's, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but because he's very publicity shy to begin with.
Yes.
And I said, look, if you want to do this, Chuck, I'm going to put a thing together and, you know, put your picture on it. He didn't even want that, but I just insisted on doing that. And, you know, it's like a few years ago, his good friend Russ Bennett in Canada, who's one of his early advisors there and a terrific guy, Russ and Lois Bennett. Russ's brother was the premier of British Columbia and came down with Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, it's not really well known, but Chuck donated like $9.5 million to the University of British Columbia to fund Alzheimer's research. Same with wildlife. He's a huge, wildlife conservationist, and he outside of under the radar, he donates millions to that. So, he's always been a guy that has a lot of concern for community, society. He came up, he grew up dirt poor. A lot of people might not know that. To the dirt poor, when I say in rural backwoods Canada, where, you didn't even have running water for. And, throughout his entire childhood, animals were a major part of it, whether they were pigeons that he raised or horses, dogs. So he had this compassion, people know the story about he became a geologist, and then he found the first diamond mine in North America, the Ekati Mine. Of course, that's where Tale of Ekati name comes from. And, he's a real kind of throwback in a lot of ways to that type of Indiana Jones type of personality, And that kind of fits into this gesture, which, quite frankly, he didn't even blink at, he just wanted to help. And I got a quote from him, and we put something together for an announcement. It all happened when he called me on Friday, and I said, all right, well, it's the weekend, but I'll call you back Monday. 30 seconds on the phone with him, Steve. I just told him, okay, I'm going to put this together and put it out. He said, yeah, that's fine. And that's how it all happened.
You talk about him with the publicity aspect. And whenever it makes me laugh, because whenever I see him, that's it. In recent years, with some of the, some of the top horses, particularly Unbridled Forever and Forever Unbridled,
right?
He would be at a lot of big race days, because both of them, would run in major feature distaff races.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever I would either congratulate him or wish him luck, and I would say, Mr. Fipke, or it's a Chuck, he always turns and looks like he's surprised that anyone knows who he is. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right? He's got that look on him. It's like, oh, how do you know who I am? Makes me laugh.
Yeah, no, he's really unassuming that way.
And, yes.
And, as I said, I'd love to get him on your show, and I think he'd be a really good interview for you. Like that time when I sat down with you at Saratoga,
sure.
The cake, just like that. I think that would make for a great interview. You got to really cajole him to try to even do something. and the way I actually try to do it is that I said, well, Chuck, just don't think about yourself, think about the good of the industry type of thing. And that's usually the
that gets him.
The cajole. Better than.
I love it.
He's just a great guy.
Well, it's just nice that he's out after being kind of anonymous when it came to the industry. He has become much more out front, and that's great. It's very welcome. Well, speaking of the good of the industry, Sid, you wrote a piece on Thursday. That we absolutely, and the reason, one of the reasons to have this separate conversation, we can do Pedigree tomorrow, particularly regarding Mr. Big News, who's got a fascinating page. A Galileo mare, and there's a lot going on there. But this piece deserves its own showcase, and I want you to talk about how long you've been you know, you've been tracking this volatility index concept, and you know, give everybody the overview of what it, what this financial upheaval, this situation, economic disruption, as you call it, what it portends, because some people are going to need to plan, and that includes racetracks and sales companies and consigners and pinhookers. I mean, this affects everybody.
Well, it does, and you know, to put everything in perspective, people have to understand two concepts first. One is, everybody knows that after the financial crisis, the great financial crisis caused the economic meltdown of, say, 2007 to 2009. We've all lived through that, and everybody knows that shortly in 2009, March of 2009, the stock market hit its lowest point, and then, of course, it's come back. And from 2010, 2011 to, you know, just a few months ago, it's been an 11-year, essentially, bull market run. Stock market has been going up. And, of course, if you were to just use the stock market as the overall gauge, there's so many economic indicators that, you know, this isn't an economics class, but I want to keep it simple, that if you were to use the stock market, say the Dow Jones, as just some one indicator of many, it's gone up, it's quadrupled in value since the crash. Everybody knows, and we've talked about it on the show, yearling prices, say, at cumulative September have gone up. We've seen the top of the yearling markets absolutely thrive, right? And we've always commented, though, that within that success, we've always noted that, well, you know what, the middle down has always been kind of shaky, particularly the lower end. Well, so you have a bull market run. You've had a stock market that's quadrupled. You've had yearling prices that have more than doubled since they dropped to 60,000 in 2009 into the, 120,000 average Keeneland. But the striking anomaly is that during this entire time, during this great prosperity, quote-unquote, the full crop has remained flat. It's remained in the 19 to 22,000 range. It hasn't moved. It hasn't gone up with the yearling prices. It hasn't gone up with the stock market. So one basic assumption from this is that in the best of times, it's not enough to move the needle of the stock, the full crop up. However, in the worst of times, the full crop always drops. This happened after the 2009 financial crisis, the economic global economic meltdown. From 92 to about 2008, the full crop was between 38,000 and 35,000. After that economic upheaval, takes a few years of, you know, sorting itself out, and the full crop settled into the as we pointed out, 22 to 19,000 range. Prior to that, it had settled into the 38 to 35,000 full crop range after the stock market crash in 87. In 86, the full crop was 51,000, but in 80, after the stock market crash in 87, after a few years, the full crop settled into the 38 to 35,000 range until the 2008 crash, when it again stopped, dropped, and fell into, as I mentioned, the 22 to 19. So what we're showing over this last, 40 years, is that stock full crops will go down in a bad market, but they don't go up in a good market. which is a real anomaly. But when you start to take a look at it, you can get an idea of what's happening, and that is that as in society in general, the wealthier are getting wealthier, and they're taking a bigger market share, and they're helping to keep those numbers stable, while the smaller, lower parts of the market are disappearing. So it's almost, as I said, the phrase I used in the article, it's almost a statistical sleight of hand. And the best way to kind of show it to people is, say, look at the breeding market and the stallions, right? You have fewer stallions, but they're breeding more mares at the top. Bigger books, more mares. Smaller stallions are breeding a lower number of mares, yet the foal crop has remained stable, which tells you that the bigger guys are expanding. The smaller guys are contracting, which means more people at the top, the bigger guys, are controlling more market share. And so that's that concept, keep that in mind. In bad economic times, of course, the smaller guys are going to get, or potentially they're going to get wiped out. And now we're in a situation where, you know, even bigger guys might not be immune to market conditions. And if they do get hurt or wiped out, and they're controlling more bloodstock, you may have bigger chunks disappear or suffer too. So that's essentially that concept. And I weighed that against what's called the volatility index, which is a real fear gauge. It's known as the fear index on Wall Street. And that index has paralleled right now, during the short period, exactly the same fear that we saw before the 2009 stock crash. And so I just wanted to get into people's heads that the fear is real, and in market terms, based on this particular index, which is based on the Chicago Board Options Exchange called the Cboe VIX, the VIX is, you know, used as an indicator. It's a forward-looking index. It's based on options, which are in the future, so it's got some, you know, practical usage here, and it's gone up, basically, as it did during the 2008 crisis, 2009 crash. It predicted that crash in 2009 because it was 125 days where this index was at a very high level of volatility or fear. Right now, we've had 26 straight days of the same. Of course, you know, that was 125 days. We've only had 26 days now. But if this continues, it's just going to show the same type of fear, which, you know, kind of portends worse. Not that it's going to happen. We're not. We don't know. But it's something to worth, you know, it's worth looking at and considering. And that's basically the thesis of it.
We've got several follow-up questions. Sid Fernando with us. I just put on Twitter the link to his piece from Thursday that we're discussing, mm-hmm. from the TDN, Fear Index and Foal Crops, and you can see the numbers you know, specified. You can see the visual of the graph, which is really fascinating. And, you know, we've discussed any number of times, Sid, the anomaly that exists, knowing that we've got a marketplace that is rewarding the top end, and we're always looking for that middle. It is strange that, you know, mares, I don't know where they're going when they're coming off the racetrack. And mm-hmm. I don't, you know, it's funny. Maybe I can bring this up with Kimberly Weir, who's next to talk about TRF. But it doesn't really make sense that, knowing that we could use more horses in the commercial pipeline, yet for whatever reason, even when the times have been good over the last decade plus, it does seem strange that, you know, that there wasn't, you know, even the slightest uptick. You know, and I suppose
that's
that's
a striking anomaly.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, and I would love to, you know what? I would be very interested to then put that production line as it's drawn in this chart and lay it over handle numbers and see, you know, see how much, you know, because the handle has been essentially pretty flat as well, stabilized.
Since 2008, too. You know,
right.
It might have been 15 billion before. I think it settled into the 10 billion range.
But with the purse, you know, but one of the things that you know, that is out there is the strength of the purse market. And if anything would invite added production and putting mares into, you know, into broodmare bands, it would be, you know, it would be the healthy, what has been the healthy condition. We'll see what the, you know, condition is when we're on the other side of this. I got two other follow-ups. That was just sort of a reaction. Speaking of reaction, talk about, you know, who you've heard from. You don't have to mention names, but, you know, the kinds of people you've heard from and what their sentiment that's been expressed.
Well, you know, it's amazing because, you know, you write something like this, and this is an industry where they don't want to hear stuff like this to begin with. You know, so first off, you know, I got to give props, and I did on Twitter to Sue Finley, the publisher of TDN. She allows me to, you know, write whatever I want. Of course, she's the boss. She looks at it. And you know, it's kind of, you know, she said when she finished reading it, she said, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life. And when the thing went to press, you know, a lot of times they'll put my column on the front page and go into the back. I opened up when it came out, I looked at it and was like, wait a minute, it's not even on the front page. Like buried deep in the back. And I figured, oh, shoot, you know, I doubt that there aren't going to be, I doubt that many people are going to even see it to read it. To my astonishment, it was like starting trend. TDN measured the readership of each article. It started trending at like number one almost immediately. And they have like a 3-day rate. They capture the readership for 3 days, and for all 3 days, it was number one. And then I started getting calls, and essentially, Steve, without a name, I've spoken to about, you know, 75% of the major farms in Kentucky have called me about this, and you know, a lot of them have felt the same way. I kind of put it into the context of the VIX, just to show it that way. But the feeling, the general feeling is, you know, people are worried. And so I was actually, you know, encouraged that so many people did call up, big guys in the business, breeders, small and big, all with, you know, questions and concerns. And I kind of view it sort of, I think I tweeted this too, about the way Dr. Fauci and the concept of flattening the curve. We have this projection that something could happen. Now you have to mitigate, and you have to, you know, you have to do your, quote, whatever it is in the breeding industry you do, your version of social distancing. Mitigate to flatten that curve, to try to have a projection and come in underneath it, because if you don't do anything, you're treating it as if it's just a flu. And it's not. It's something. And so you have to have a plan at this point. And that's what a lot of these guys are kind of working on, which I'm really encouraged about. And, of course, on the other side of things, it's related to what Mr. Fipke's venture, you know. You also have in these times certain individuals who come up and define something by their extraordinary actions, however big or small. Whether it's the lady I just prefaced at the beginning of the show, Nowshin Ali, in Kensington, Brooklyn, helping somebody, or whether it's a Chuck Sipke, individuals and their actions also are notable in this thing, too. So, you know, I read a piece in The Economist, or maybe it was one of the think tank pieces recently, where the author noted that after a while, you have to end up trusting your fellow humans. There comes a point where, you know, it comes down almost to that basic human interaction, intervention, alliance. It brings everything down to humanity. And it's true to a certain extent, because you plan for some of these things, like even with social distancing, but ultimately the concept of social distancing is that we're actually trusting that others are going to do the same right thing too, right? And that's what essentially comes into business too. After a while, with everybody losing or potentially losing, you've got to have some trust that people are going to do the right thing. And so I think all of this kind of ties in, and it's a great story line in itself, the humanity of everything, you know.
Well, I don't want to. I don't necessarily want to opine on my faith on that front. I will say, Sid, as I took notes when I read the piece over the weekend, you know, when you got to the full market blues, the last portion of the piece, I wrote, right. You know, I wrote top end, you know, noting that, you know, the top end has been impervious to these fluctuations, and that technically the top end is even, as you alluded, has even benefited and is burgeoned. And frankly, this all boils down to, as you and I talk about very frequently, market conditions having a distinct parallel to societal conditions. And all of this piece, all it said to me at the end, and my note at the end was wealth disparity. And that this is an absolute manifestation of the exact issue that we're facing in this country, which is concentration of wealth in too few hands.
Yeah, that's really, it does get down to that. And, you know, there's so many different moving parts to it, but that's, you know, and see, when I was writing this piece, even when you write a piece like this, well, you know, you have to keep it clear. So, like, that's why I didn't add in stock market numbers or other economic. You know, you got to concentrate on one thing to try to get your point across. And to me, it all started with just the full crop and the VIX index, because that's a stark reality. And from there, you can then address some of these issues, and they work well in addressing factors within this business that actually mirror society. It's like Franco Varola, the great pedigree writer, and I quote him all the time. He's always mentioned this. And, you know, I read Franco Varola's books when I was a teenager, like 13 or 14, and it struck me from that point on when he said, racing is a microcosm of society.
Yep.
And it's so true.
Yep. No doubt. I want people to read this piece and understand it. And, you know, maybe tomorrow, in addition to doing our regular pedigree coverage and specifically Mr. Big News, maybe we can get some suggestions out to people how they can benefit somehow and how they can react and what, you know, what they can do to, you know, gird themselves. Let this sink in, though, and let some people absorb it, Sid. And I wanted
sure.
to give it
yeah,
its
absolutely.
Own showcase.
I appreciate that because I think it's an important thing, and it's very similar to these graphs that we're all working with in terms of the coronavirus, you know. And so you say if I was an expert on this, then this is my news, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, people work in concert to try to minimize potential effects as much as they can
exactly.
for the benefit of everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Sid Fernando, everybody, follow Sid and work with him and the team at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. Plenty of time still for late season covers. You may have a mare that you find out you know, did not take. Plenty of that happens when they go to scan and see if they're in foal, and maybe market conditions have changed for you as well, and maybe there's a different decision to be made. Sid will help you with it, with the broodmare compatibility analysis. We'll get together again tomorrow with Sid to do the pedigree on Mr. Big News, which is really interesting, and a horse that's emerging. And we talk about this September Derby and, you know, what that's going to portend for, you know, late season horses. Well, this is the poster horse for that type. Took several starts to break his maiden, has improved with every start, has got a pedigree to run all day, and very, very interesting, Sid, and was a relative yeah. bargain, $95,000. What a job Chester Thomas, Brett Calhoun, and Josh Stevens have done.
They've been on the roll.
It's like it sometimes, right? Sid Fernando on a roll. Follow him on Twitter, too.
All right. Thanks, Steve. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
This was tremendous. Sid Fernando, everybody. Let's take a break. And we've got a visit from Kimberly Weir, who, of course, is with TRF. She's the major gift and planned giving director. And, of course, for so long, that role Diane Pakulski, of course. We used to talk to Diane on a regular basis. Well, Kim is going to join us. They've got a 4 o'clock Zoom tour. And it's always a good time to catch up on what's happening with the herd, the biggest herd in aftercare, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Kim Weir next, Andy Serling, John White. At the Races, Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a bride.
No time to get down, cause I'm
We're back from a break. Kim Weir is joining us from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. First time visit for Kim, who is the director of Major Gifts and Planned Giving. And Kim, of course, a big role given the size of the herd that the TRF manages. It's a pleasure, even under stressful circumstances, to have her join us. Kim, welcome.
Well, good morning, Steve. It's such a pleasure to be here. I am probably, like so many of your guests, the first one to say I've been listening to you for years, my husband and I, and it's such a treat and an honor to be able to chat with you about horses today. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. And you mentioned your husband, Bob. You guys all safe and everybody well protected?
Yes, we really feel fortunate in so many ways, including living here in Saratoga Springs, and the community is so engaged and yet safe and quiet, and all of our friends and family that we're keeping in close touch with are well at this point, for which we're very grateful. Thank you for asking.
Well, meanwhile, the horses, they're funny. Some of them socially distance themselves out in the paddocks and out in the fields. Others like to congregate and make new friends. Kim, before we talk about today and the virtual tour and some of the things that TRF is doing to keep people engaged, bring us up to speed on the herd. And there was an effort to consolidate and to pare down the size. Nobody's obligation in aftercare is more of a burden, really, than TRFs, who, when they take a horse on, there's a chance that they're going to be there for 25 years.
Yeah.
And that is a demand that is unique, as opposed to, some of the individual horses that go on to second careers and go to individual, obviously individuals are going to, keep a horse forever, but they're not keeping 600, 700, 800.
Right. And we use the term the promise of a lifetime. That is central to the TRF's approach to our work and the sanctuary we provide. It is a lifetime, and the thing that many folks, you know, learn along the way is that suddenly this horse they knew at 3 and 4 years old is actually, by natural lifespan, going to live till it's 25 or 30, and 80% of our herd is over 20 years old. So, yes, we are very proud and deeply committed to our mission of that lifetime of sanctuary, but it is a big responsibility. Our current herd size is 550 horses. They live in 18 farms in 9 states across the country, and we are entirely devoted to them and incredibly grateful for every single individual who has supported us through the years. And Steve, you are such a tremendous spokesperson for our herd. We are so grateful for your knowledge of what we do and your appreciation for what we do and the opportunity to kind of give an update, which I'm delighted to do on this day. And, you know, to your point about how funny horses are, one of the best features about them is they don't watch the news, and they, even better, don't talk about the news. So they're giving all of us on the team, and I want this to be true for all of our friends and supporters, to know that horses are there to give us hope in what normal looks like, because that is what our herd, all 550 of them, as we speak, are probably finishing their breakfast, and they are being horses, and they are creating a good feeling, a positive feeling, all for those who love them, and that's sort of what keeps us really, really supercharged this time with all that's going on.
What's also different about TRF, and you talk about the 18 farms and spread across the country, and they're all a little bit different, and they're all unique in their own way, and some, you know, there are some where horses do have, you know, responsibilities other than, you know, running around in the field and eating and coming in to be groomed. Other than that, there are some that are on working, not working farms per se, but working environments. Talk a little bit about, in fact, we could even tie it into today's tour to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Well, so of the 18, 7 of those farms are TRF Second Chances farms, which is as you indicate, in those cases, the horses are still predominantly just being horses, eating, running around the field, but they are doing it in the role of teacher because they are being cared for by the inmates at 7 correctional facilities in 7 different states across the country. And that is, in fact, what we'll be sharing in our behind-the-scenes tour later today. But the really wonderful thing about those programs, which is always wonderful, but perhaps a little more wonderful today, is that their routines are uninterrupted specifically because the men and women in our Second Chances programs have been learning and have learned all that they need to know to keep feeding and caring for the horses. Like, this is an unusual time, just to bring your audience into sort of what that looks like today, is that generally our farms are operating such that our instructors, our vocational instructors and farm managers, are working supervising the men and women, giving them instruction, and then they're managing the herd, up to 50 or 60 horses at some of our prison programs. So there are some changes today because of our current situation, where the farm manager may or may not be able to have any direct contact with the men and women in the prisons. It's just all part of the security and distancing. But it's truly, I've been talking to all of our farm managers, all of us are creeping in close contact, and they've not missed a beat. They may not be able to be in the same classroom together as they were a month ago, but the men and women know their roles. They know what the horses need. They have all the supervision of our farm manager, and it's available, by phone or by FaceTime, or just frankly, keeping the routines of the horses is keeping those men and women in routines as well. So we have been trying, we actually have one video on our Instagram, which is from our Second Chances program in Ocala, and it's a couple of the women in that program just who actually were able to do a video and show us that for them, things are continuing as normal. There have been adjustments. We are making sure we manage all the expected safety considerations. But there something very comforting for all of us on the team, and I think all of us who love what we do, to just keep seeing scenes of what normal looks like. And so I'm happy to say that while there are many things that are on our radar that we're concerned about, our day-to-day as of today, April 14th, is that the horses are being horses, and they are being very well cared for across the board by all of the folks who have that role.
Would love to give everybody the specifics of the seven facilities and where they are. And Blackburn Correctional, which is in Kentucky, Central Maryland Correctional in Sykesville in Maryland, of course, Wallkill, which might be, you know, the most familiar, I would guess, to people.
Yep. So those are three. And then there's Camden, South Carolina. That's the Watery Correctional Facility. There's Lowell, which is in Ocala, Florida. There's Vandalia, which is in Illinois, our one Midwestern program. And then as of last October, we opened our first West Coast program in Pleasant Valley State Prison in Coalinga, California. Those are our current seven. And they are, they're each unique, as you said so well. They are each unique. And yet what this, if you'll allow me, this virtual tour that I've been offering for the last week and even this afternoon is really a chance to show all of our friends and supporters what each of these prisons look like in terms of the footprint and the number of horses, the number of acres, the nuances, as well as a chance to explain how the whole thing works fundamentally. How does the partnership between the TRF and the Second Chances program work? Now that we all have, many of us have a little bit more time other than our beloved, incredible front line that are out there working 24/7, those who are at home may have a little more time to digest sort of the 201 level of what is it like to have a prison in a horse in a prison, and how does that come about? So that's a lot of what we're talking about in this little 45-minute presentation that I'm offering today at 4 o'clock.
Let's give everybody specifics, too. Kim Weir is with us from TRF, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, that, as you just heard, maintains 550 head at 18 farms nationwide. And today at 4, how do people participate?
The easiest way, Steve, is just to go to our Facebook page. We have an event set up there for today's 4 o'clock presentation. It's on Zoom, so I'm guessing at this point if just about every human on Earth has now spent some time on Zoom, so we're offering it that way. But I would go to our Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation Facebook page, and all I'd ask is that you RSVP. This is certainly no cost. This is really meant to be educational, informational, perhaps inspirational, but and at very least, a distraction from the news for 45 minutes. So I just ask folks to RSVP because then I will send you the Zoom link. I'm not putting our Zoom on Facebook, but it is easy to just click the RSVP button. And I've been doing, I think I've presented probably 10 of these presentations over the past week, Steve. I've had maybe 80 different people join me, which I'm finding is folks are trying to find productive ways to spend their time that is somewhat positive, that is looking to the future. I'm thrilled that my horses, it's the horses that do this, not me, we can offer that. And we will be continuing to offer these. So I think we'll have another one on Friday at 2 o'clock. So for your audience that might want to do this, just keep a close eye on our Facebook page. That's probably the easiest way to know when they're happening and how to just sign up, which we'd love for folks to do. One of the most gratifying things that's happened over the past week of doing this is it's an experiment. You know, we're all learning to do things in different ways. I usually take VIP tours to our prisons, and of course I can't do that from my home in Saratoga. But one thing we've started seeing is that folks who've listened to the information and think, oh, this is really interesting, I want to share this with friends of mine who just need something positive to hear. So we've got a few examples where racing partnerships are now hosting their own virtual happy hours with my horses as the star. Windstar Stablemates is doing that on Wednesday, and Brown Road Racing is doing one on Thursday. And Lord knows, there's nothing I enjoy talking about more than our horses, which is the danger of inviting me onto your show, Steve. So I will just say, if you're interested, please reach out and or just email me directly. That's also super simple. My email is kim@thoroughbredretirement.org, and I am online 24/7.
We should also mention, as part of today's session, as part of today's tour, you've got a guest that it will be, I think, will be pretty interesting for those that have seen the movie The Mustang.
Yeah.
I mean, this is different. It's different, but it's not. You'll appreciate, you know, who you're going to hear from today.
Yes. Well, so shall we tell your audience, Steve, who my special guest is? Okay. So yes, I'm absolutely delighted about this. I tell you, these horses, when they get under our skin, as we all know, they stay there. So our special guest today at 4 o'clock is actually the former superintendent of the Walk Hill Correctional Facility. His name is David Miller. He was the superintendent for a long time, I think over a decade. And he has remained very closely attached to the horses and the program. He's a tremendous spokesperson for anyone who may have seen the footage on Saturday that we were so gratified that Naira and Fox shared our feature on Saturday for during the races, America's Day at the Races. David Miller was on there, so you saw a cameo of him. But he is just a passionate believer in the impact of this program on the men that he was overseeing during his Walk Hill days. So I love that he's joining us. And I think that this may become a bit of a regular appearance for him because his passion for the work is extraordinary. And he has, like all of us, has a little time on his hands at home. So yeah, if you're interested, he'll be available for Q&A. And my gosh, he will enrich my presentation tremendously because while I try to capture what the impact of our horses is on the humans they affect, this is a gentleman who knows that better than I'll probably ever learn it. So yes, David Miller is our special guest, superintendent of Walk Hill, will join us for today's little conversation.
I'm sending out the Facebook link and also a link to the Make a Gift page at trfinc.org and everything about TRF and its mission and its facilities and the staff and everybody is at the, you know, the full website in addition to featured things that you know, come about and you know, Facebook you know, valuable outlet as well for, you know, staying in constant contact with people that are, you know, that follow this. Give everybody a picture, Kim, about the, you know, the finances, how their money is used, and what a typical gift can do, and obviously with racetracks operating spectator free for really the near future, there's potential to miss, you know, some live fundraising opportunities. And so online giving is going to be, you know, that much more important. For instance, we don't know yet if you're going to be able to have, you know, the Hay Oats and Spaghetti Party at Saratoga, you know, but things like the Hay Bale Drive, I mean, they certainly can go on through online giving. But give everybody a snapshot of where the money goes and how it's apportioned.
Yes, well, I'm gratified to do that because, you know, we say it sort of laughingly, but we know that horses, all of those listeners who know horses, they do one thing: they eat money for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but that's in the form of hay. So getting to the specifics, our budget, our number one line item on the entire TRF expense budget, expenses, is hay. And that's what 550 horses rely on through the winter months, which are sort of start early depending on where the herd is and they end late depending on where the herd is. So the hay drive is one of the most popular and one of our most important fundraisers for sure. And the truth is we usually run that in the fall because we're preparing for the winter. But that cycle, the cyclicality of our expenses when it comes to hay, and then you follow that with grain, the true sustenance of these animals. I'll just go ahead and say this in terms of where we are today, the challenge, a challenge for us, which is a challenge for everyone who takes care of horses, is that the winter is long, and by the end of the winter, which we're entering now here, April, May, we've depleted all of those amazing resources that come in through our hay drive and our end of year campaigns. This is the most costly 6 months. We've just finished them, which is on the one hand good, on the other hand very worrisome, because here we are in kind of, it, frankly, our most dicey cash flow period, which is the second quarter of the year, and then this crisis has happened. So an important message being that our primary costs are food, then vet and farrier, in essentially that order, is that any donation makes an incredible impact. We've been hearing these ads on television, which is the same concept for us. If you think your donation of any amount won't make a difference, it will. And that's where we break things down to sort of what do you get? So $25 is about 5 bales of hay. $1,000 is a horse trailer full of hay. You know, so we put those dollars straight into the resources that the horses need. Another way to look at giving, which is just something that a lot of folks have enjoyed because they feel much more personally connected to our herd. It's rather hard to imagine 550 horses. You immediately conjure up like Montana or something with a vast expanse. But most of our horses live in these farms, and so one of our most popular ways to support our herd is to sponsor a specific horse, is to really make a connection with one horse. Maybe he or she ran at a track that you love, he's a gray and you love a dappled gray. There's lots of ways to sort of build that connection. And Jennifer Stevens is our Director of Development and Communications. She manages our horse sponsorship partner program. And it is a really wonderful way to make a gift of any amount, every single dollar goes to these expenses, and then to know that your horse is the one, is get information about that horse, to get a picture of them, to look up their past performances. My husband and I, Bobby and I, actually sponsored a horse in one of our Virginia farms for years before we moved here. His name was Atlas Shrugged. So we sponsored him at $2,500 a year because that was the cost for all of his expenses for a year. And then we looked him up because he was a war horse. He'd run, he'd run it everywhere. He'd run at parks. He'd run at Delaware. He'd run at all the mid-Atlantic tracks that we frequented. And he ran a lot. And then when his career was ended, he ended up at the TRF. So there are, as Steve so well puts, there's a number of ways to engage. But any gift of any amount really matters. And it does, frankly, matter more than ever now because of the cyclicality of our cash flow combined with the crisis. We really appreciate the chance just to say that, and to know that every supporter helps, including those supporters who then tell someone else about what they're hearing, which is coming back to this little thing I'm doing this afternoon, is just information is perhaps the most valuable thing today in our world. So we're trying to share that and encourage others to share that too.
Well, I just shared on Twitter the link to both the Facebook page of TRF and the opportunity to register for today's tour at 4:00, and to also, basically tie into that resource and get information, go up, get on that list and find out when there's going to be more of these. And also, of course, at trfinc.org, the full website with the full details. And you mentioned the Virginia farm, the one, of course, at Montpelier, one of the most spectacular, predictably so, but the DuPont estate, one of my favorite visits, to go see, Woodbury Payne and his, at Ingleside training. Mm-hmm. And Woody took me around years ago. And it's really it's a wonderful rolling hills and really a remarkable layout. And the horses get to really enjoy, an idyllic retirement at Montpelier.
Virginia is a lovely place to be a horse.
Yes.
That's my state. I've spent the last 25 years, and we have a big sanctuary farm in Front Royal. I just posted pictures of it from last April. I mean, it is a glorious place to be a horse, and we have quite a bunch in Virginia.
Well, Kim Weir, a real pleasure to have a chance to get introduced, and TRF has been a constant presence on At the Races for 15 plus years, and anything we can do to help communicate all the good work that's done at the farms and with the Second Chance program for the incarcerated people that may utilize the horse as an avenue for their own second chances. There's been so many wonderful stories on that front. Well done, and best wishes. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Steve. It is truly a pleasure to be here, and I wish all of your listeners to stay safe and to be well.
Kimberly Weir, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, the Director of Major Gifts and Planned Giving, and for those that are of a mind on that front, get a hold of Kim as well. And for those of you that want to adopt a horse and want to just help out, $5 buys a hay bale. And, you know, there's so many ways to help over 500 horses that TRF maintains. Let's take a break, a little past the top of the hour. Andy Serling and John White before we wrap up on what's been another full dance card this Tuesday at the races. Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you were racing 2-year-olds,